Welcome to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined today by...
Dark Nodge.
And I believe, as it was rightly stated, nothing good comes from Canada, including Dark Nodge. All right, so we got a new chapter pack was released this week. Did you smell the new cards before you got the pack?
I haven't opened my pack, but it's there and it's cellophane sitting with my other unopened packs waiting for regional season.
Very interesting. Your other unopened packs. What other packs have you not opened?
The one before this.
Okay. Very interesting. So, Dark Nodge, let's start by taking a little bit deeper look at the pack than we normally do, because, frankly, there were a lot of good cards in this pack. Were you surprised by that?
I was absolutely surprised. I've gotten used to, you know, packs with two or three great cards. I took a look at this one, and I saw a half dozen easily that I just thought were fantastic cards.
Yeah, me too. I was really surprised. In fact, I went to my Wednesday meetup last week. They had my pack on hold for me. They didn't have any others. They ran out. So I was the only person running Naval Enhancements. And I just chucked a bunch of cards into my Greyjoy deck and was really excited. We can talk about that in a couple minutes. But let's start with the big boppers of the set. So we get 6-7 strength, most of the time 4-cost armies. Which of these armies impresses you most?
Honestly, I think they're all fantastic, though I do shy away from the ones with the mercenary trait just because of the huge amount of dissensions in the current environment. So that's the Barrow one that has the mercenary trait. And I believe the Targ one, yes, the Targ one as well has the mercenary trait. So both of these, to me, have these huge drawbacks of pretty easily being discarded.
Yeah, now, I agree. And especially Barrow. The way I view Barrow is there's all these crazy expensive, awesome characters I want to play. I just don't see the Barrow army making it for me unless I'm building some really specific deck.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't like the keyword on the Barrow one as well because it has stealth. Though you can use like Macy's Hook to stand it or something. Other than that, you know, you have a 7-strength army, you're probably going to win the challenge anyway. So stealth doesn't help you as much as, say, deadly or renown or some of the other better keywords.
Yeah, that's true. I like stealth, though, for the reason you said. Massey's Hook is great. And then also, Barrow is one of those decks where I'm always tempted to play Seductive Promises, and it's just a little bit easier to win by 4 if you have stealth. But you're right. It's not quite as... if it was renown, that would be even better for Barrow.
Yeah. Now, the one big thing I love about these all these armies is this little extra text after the fleet from whatever is declared as a naval attacker. Choose another character you control, stand and remove that character from the challenge. This just has huge impacts on so many decks that I don't think a lot of people caught right away. You know, for Barrow, you can use it with things like Wicked Seductress that, you know, if you don't know with Wicked Seductress, basically there's a response after she kneels. You choose and kneel one character without an intrigue icon. This means that, you know, she could be involved in a power attack. You could kneel a character. The fleet can jump in. She stands back up. You win the power attack with the fleet. And then she kneels for an intrigue and kneels another character. You could do the same kind of thing with brothel guards. And in Stark, you can do it with the Bastard Boys to up your claim. So you can have that one claim plot and use the Bastard Boys twice in a single round to pump your claim up to 3.
Yeah, the Bastard Boys trick is really cool because normally when I play a Stark deck with the Bastard Boys, I've been loading it with 2 claim plots. It's really an interesting idea that you could play feasibly 1 claim control plots and still have 3 claim all your kill events and have kind of a new take on the Stark murder deck. I'm a bit interested to try that. Have you put that together at all?
I fooled with it a little bit, but it's tough to currently play the Stark naval icons because they just don't have enough of a spread to kind of, you know, use black sails and all the naval things. But, you know, you could literally take out one of Stark's great cards, Northern Cavalry Flank, throw in this other army and continue to use it in your regular Bastard Boy deck and be able to push your claim up.
Have you lost your mind?
I think under certain circumstances, the two armies are equivalent.
I would have to disagree for the following reason. A 5-cost versus a 7-cost, I don't think Stark can actually pay 7 gold to bring a character out. They just don't have those kind of resources. So if it gets searched and detained, if you get one of your other armies first, if your opponent isn't running an agenda, I'm actually seeing that a little bit more now, you are probably going to be stuck with this card in your hand, whereas the cavalry flank, you're going to be able to get it out. It might be painful, but you're going to be able to get that card out.
Sure, but I think, you know, even in the current environment, we're looking at an 80 to 90% saturation on agendas. Most people at the competitive level are still running agendas. And, you know, that little bit of renown also is a nice boost for Stark. It can help speed them up, and sometimes they just need that little extra push to close out a game before, you know, a Val or something like that wipes their board. And the trick with the Bastard Boys, and actually with some of, you know, Maesters or things like that, can be worth it. So it depends, like I said, it depends on the deck. And I would definitely do it if I was deciding to run, like, Black Sails or something, because the Naval Enhancement gives me that that ability to trigger that agenda.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Another more basic and obvious aspect is stealth. You know, you can attack with a small character with stealth, stealth somebody, then jump him in, bring that stealth character back out so they can stealth again in another challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm thinking Mira Reed or somebody like that. What do you think about the Martell one? The Martell army to me looks rather feeble and disappointing. Have you found a good use for it?
I have not. I tried putting it in a couple decks. I've actually played with every card in this set so far, and I really find the Martell one lackluster.
Yeah, so basically the problem is it's missing a naval enhancement, and it's quite a specific response, which says, discard a card from your hand to cancel an effect just triggered that chooses one of your Sand Snake characters as the only target.
Yeah, and I just don't see a lot of Sand Snake decks still.
Yes, agreed. This looks like a card that is a niche card in a niche deck that nobody plays. So you might as well use that as the back of a proxy if you use proxies. So the Lannister one has its naval icon is on the intrigue, and it has deadly, and it has a war crest. And immediately I got excited, and then I realized, wait, it only has intrigue and power icons. Now, this is great for the deadly, but it's terrible for the war crest. Have you come up with any ideas to exploit the war crest, or are you just thinking on this particular card, we're pretty much ignoring the war crest?
I mean, you can use it in some specific cases because you can give it a military icon through other mechanisms, right? Like you could use the chain that would produce a military icon on it or other types of shenanigans. But overall, I don't see a lot of use for the Warcrest.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm thinking that's, and tell me if you think I'm crazy, the one thing that Lannister Power Behind the Throne for me was lacking was good characters. Now, if I'm paying 7 for this, I'm not really sure that falls into that realm of good characters. Then it's just a huge, overcosted character. But if I'm paying 4 for this and a Power Behind the Throne deck, this seems pretty powerful because it gives me options. In addition to my regular Power Behind the Throne deck, I can throw in Terminal Schemes to make it a direct kill deck. I can throw in Seductive Promises to steal other people's fleets. I can basically make it a rip everything out of your hand, then rip everything off your board kind of deck. And that has me a little bit excited.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives the fleets actually in general, I think, give a lot more ability to some of the houses to run some more direct steal or direct kill events like Seductive Promises that they couldn't have run prior to this. And I think that's great, but it also starts to push more towards this permanent removal trend. And I'm not sure if I like the game in a place where there's tons and tons of permanent removal, because I find in games with a lot of permanent removal that they're one-sided very quickly.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, once you get board control, then you win one challenge and you remove 3 characters, they have to be able to put out 4 just to even keep somebody on the board, which is really difficult. Another new card that I was thinking would couple well with this fleet and go into a Lannister Power Behind the Throne deck is Little Bird. And that might seem like a bit of an odd claim. What makes Little Bird great is the ability challenges Neil Little Bird to choose a character until end of the phase that character gains, choose one, an intrigue icon, stealth, or infamy. So you might say, hello, you're running Power Behind the Throne. Why do you need more intrigue icons? And Dark Knowledge, why might you think you would need more intrigue icons in a Power Behind the Throne deck?
The moment I saw Little Bird, actually, I thought, hey, look, Lannister's finally getting a way to reduce the control that basically shuts down its Power Behind the Throne rush deck. Because stuff like Martell, if it's icon removals, okay, take away the icons. I'm just going to give that intrigue icon back to Cersei. I'm just going to give that intrigue icon back to the fleet. So, and, you know, don't discount the power of stealth as well, because giving stealth to a character can be huge. Sure, you might have just got through, you know, a couple intrigue challenges, but you couldn't have got through that military challenge without giving stealth to, you know, one of your painted dogs, for instance, who stealth through a military challenge for you or something. This guy is extremely versatile. At one cost, I'm not so scared of that ally trait. People are going to use Dissension on better targets. And if they do use it on Little Bird, I'm not going to cry myself to sleep for paying one gold. But he is really, really strong. The one concern I have, of course, is that one cost slot is choked a little bit in a lot of Lannister decks. But I think he would definitely push out at least the gold chuds, in my opinion.
Yeah, for me, I almost think, like, what do you mean the one gold slot is choked? I mean, I'll take 22 one gold characters if they're awesome. I mean, maybe that means I have to run Forgotten Plans in that deck, which is not a card I would normally want to run. But if it gives me an even greater chance to have that monster flop, it's almost the more one gold characters, the merrier. I mean, I'm not going to run 9 one cost of gold characters or something, but I'll run Tallman, Penny, some Deceptas, some of these, some gold characters. I'm okay with that.
You have to be a little careful, because those one gold characters normally don't have a big icon spread. They normally have one strength, so things like a threat turn where they all get discarded, you can just totally demolish your deck and stuff like that. And also, for me, when I'm building, I always think, you know, I'm going to have 2-cost characters, 3-cost characters, and 4-cost characters probably in my deck. And I want to be able to maximize my setups by using 1 or 2 one-cost characters. But I also don't want to drop 6 one-cost characters and have no real strong characters to push through challenges and win with. Because a one-strength intrigue icon isn't going to do a lot for you if I'm using it to actually attack.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to take out my 3 and 4-cost characters, but what I'm thinking is, some of the 2-cost characters I might be willing to pull for a character like this because he's so versatile.
Okay, I agree with you there. But the thing is, in most of my Lannister Power Behind the Throne decks, I'm not running a ton of 2-cost characters.
Yeah, me too. I think what I ended up doing was something like pulling 1 Doubting Septa and then maybe pulling 1 Painted Dogs to put 2 of them in or something like that for my first try at it. And I'll probably take out 1 gold weenie to put a 3rd one in as well.
Right. Yeah, that's very much like what I would do.
But my basic thought is something like this. What makes Power Behind the Throne double-sided is Martell and Lannister. And if you can negate Martell as one of those double-sided matchups, then you're really only left with the mirror matchup, which is still going to be terrible because of all the Neil. But you're basically negating icon control. So I absolutely love Little Bird.
Yeah, me too. And I find this pack adds a lot of incentive for people to play old archetypes that maybe they weren't tier 1. That looks like, you know, with this card plus a few other cards, maybe they will become tier 1. And I think that's cool because we're seeing the stuff that was in that tier 2, tier 1.5 category get small boosts. And if the rest of the series continues that way, maybe it'll boost them into Tier 1 and we'll see some more competitive play with those older decks.
Yeah, that would be interesting. A possibility to fill that gap is a Clansman House of Dreams decks with the Inn at the Crossroads. So you get all the gold from the Clansman And then the one downside of that is the Klansmen don't have intrigue icons. Boom, you stick Little Bird in there, suddenly you've got burned men with intrigue icons and all kinds of interesting stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I really like Little Bird. So we've talked a little bit about the power behind the throne deck and how it was affected. We talked a little bit about, you know, possible uses for the Stark and, you know, a high claim deck. But all these armies also lean, of course, towards the newest agenda, which is Black Sails. And if you haven't heard, because it's been posted just about everywhere now, I think, the Black Sails agenda reads, when you reveal Black Sails as your agenda, shuffle your deck and cut it into two stacks. Then the opponent to your left chooses one stack to be the hold, which is out of play, and the other stack is your draw deck. And then you have a response. After you win a challenge in which you had at least one naval attacker, choose one card from the hold. At the end of the phase, add it to your hand. Limit once per phase.
So the first time I read this, I thought, holy cow, this might be really good. And then I started thinking about it and thought, wow, this sounds like the worst agenda ever. And now, upon thinking of it a third time, I'm completely lost. Dark Nage, is it great or terrible? Help me.
It's really hard to tell this early in the pack. I think it would be extremely good if they have enough naval support. If there's not enough naval support, then it won't be that great because your naval characters will just get controlled. They'll get knelt out by Lannister. They'll lose their icons from Martell. Stark will kill them. And then all of a sudden you got this agenda that you can't really use. And now, a few things about this agenda that a lot of people don't realize is because it says that you're just choosing a card, from the hold, it means that you're actually allowed to look at your hold immediately. So after your deck's been split and they've chosen which one's your deck, you can pick up your hold and go through it and look and see what cards are in it. And that actually gives you a lot of play information that you didn't have before, because now you know what's in your remainder of your deck. So that's something to keep in mind when you're using this agenda.
Yeah, I like that. It helps you make that decision, do I mulligan or not, a lot easier.
Exactly, because your mulligans actually have so much less of an effect when you mulligan with Black Sails, because you're mulliganing into just those 30 cards, which means, you know, you have twice as much chance of pulling the same card again as you did before.
The other thing, be careful when you cut the deck. I didn't really think about what that meant, and I built one of these, and I cut my deck, and I started looking at it, and it was really uneven, so I started, you know, evening it out, and my opponent was like, whoa, what are you doing? It doesn't say cut the deck and then make it 50-50. It says cut the deck. So you better be real careful. You don't want to cut yourself a 20-card deck and then run out of cards pretty quick. What I think makes this possibly good, and I'm not even sure it's good. It might be terrible. I haven't decided yet. But Naval Reinforcements, the new plot, is amazing with it. So you basically get a 4-5-1 plot, which is pretty darn good stats. And then it reads, when revealed, if you are running the Black Sails agenda, reveal one character from the hold and add it to your hand. This is really amazing, especially if you're like me and you have in your head already every matchup and how you want to approach it. You can go in and get that character that helps you in that specific matchup. And I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it can be really good. Definitely a strong plot. And I think, you know, it's been said a few times, but the strength of that plot really remains to be seen based on the strength of Black Sails to come. But from what I'm looking at, like just the support we see in this chapter pack, I think we're going to see some Black Sails decks in the future, and they're going to be pretty decent. I think they'll be competitive.
Yeah, I think the support's really strong. I mean, I built a Greyjoy Black Sails deck. It started as just a regular Greyjoy deck, and then I said, what the heck, I'll make it a Black Sails on the fly. I put in the army, I put in two copies of Apostle of the Drowned God, I put in three copies of the Summersea Corsair, the new smuggler that lets you reveal a card and take it into your hand when you play it, which, by the way, is another phenomenal card. That's a lot of cards already in the first chapter pack with naval icons.
It's actually better than just reveal a card. It's reveal a card for every smuggler. So if you have three or four smugglers in play, you get to look at three or four cards, pick one of them, and put it in your hand.
Yeah, I think that means we're going to see some more smugglers.
Well, we've already seen spoilers for a bunch of Baratheon smugglers on the FFG site, right? Because we saw Davos Seaworthy, I believe, was a smuggler.
I believe you're right.
And Salador San was a smuggler as well.
Yeah, he looks ridiculously good in a smuggler deck. So, I mean, right off the top of my head, it looks like there's at least going to be a decent Baratheon Black Sails deck. The problem is, it being competitive assumes that Baratheon isn't terrible, which remains to be seen. As right now, since it's the bottom house in the meta, I don't think this just lifts it right up. With some other cards, it could. But what interests me is, let's get crazy. Let's get really crazy and just say, let's put three copies of Mirror Reed in a deck. First turn, play Naval Reinforcements, bam. The odds of getting Mirror Reed are really high just right off. I mean, is that enough to make you want to run Black Sails? Or do you really feel like you need to load that deck up with the opportunity to trigger it?
That might be enough. I mean, if you look at current Stark builds, they use Winter for card advantage or Knight for card advantage. So Black Sails, as long as you can, you know, reasonably think that you're going to get one or two additional cards from your plot, I think it's worth it. Now, whether you can get one or two additional cards from your plot, that remains to be seen.
By plot, you meant agenda, right?
Agenda, excuse. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because I wonder about that. I mean, it would be really interesting, and I think I might do that just for the heck of it. Just run, like, a regular Stark murder deck and get Mira and just see how powerful that would be. I think the problem is what you're missing is the other agendas that are even better. Like, I think getting a free Mira is probably not as good as having Winter, or not as good as getting a draw every single turn from Knights.
Yeah, it's definitely not. You'd have to get Mira and trigger that at your Black Sails agenda one or two times, I think.
Right. And you do have cards like the Army, the Smuggler who reveals. So I feel like right now in this early spot. Okay, speaking of Stark, we got another, looks like to me, an amazing character in Wyman Manderly. Three cost, three strength, intrigue and power icons, naval on the intrigue, and he has the amazing text, while Wyman Manderly is participating in a challenge, participating characters with strength two or lower do not count their strength.
I'm not as excited about this card as everyone else is. Everyone I talk to says, wow, this card's amazing. I like it. But I don't get that, oh my god, this is going to change the landscape of the game, or this is fantastically cool. I'm about as excited about this as I am about Little Bird.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. I mean, I really think Little Bird is absolutely amazing. And frankly, a three-cost out-of-house character to give someone intrigue, stealth, or infamy could be a possibility. The ally trait makes me think no. Wyman Manderly, though, it just seems like Stark is plugging up all its holes. So now you have Jumping Caitlin, who can do tricks with intrigue challenges. Wyman Manderly now is doing tricks with them. You have Reek, who does tricks with them. It just seems like Stark's apparent problem, that is intrigue challenges, is actually becoming its strength pretty rapidly.
Yeah, I really do feel like Stark is moving towards this. We are the high-efficiency house. That's their thing more than, we're the military icon house. So now they're like, we have all the icons, and we have cheap characters with good strength, and that's kind of what we do, and we kill stuff. While the other houses are starting to shy away. Because even the other houses, I'm seeing more and more of all the icon spreads in all the houses now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I started the game, I felt like Stark was a bit limited in intrigue icons, and then within 3 months of being in the game with the packs that came out, it was just boom, that they have no limitations at all. I'm wondering if what I said before is actually a possibility of running one claim control plots with the Bastard Boys, because you have all of these really great 2 and 3 and 4 cost characters. If you could run plots that have a bit more gold, it seems like that's the only problem they have, is they don't have quite enough gold. And if you can run more gold and more control from your plots and fix the control problem, man, a Stark tech could be really strong. I'm thinking maybe with like a cities plot deck. I don't think I've ever run a Stark murder deck with the cities plots.
Yeah, absolutely. Something like that could probably function.
Another crazy idea I have, and stop me if you think this is too crazy, but any Maester deck. Now, you're probably going to have to run the Gold Link to be able to use him in a lot of Maester decks. But if you have him in a Maester deck and you have the Lead Link, you are able to make anyone 2 strength or lower. Now, maybe that's overkill because you can just probably Lead Link down to 0 anyone you need to. But it just seems like something interesting, some interesting shenanigans that you might be able to pull off.
Yeah, he may have some things that you can... Like you said, I think if you can reduce their strength to that point, you know, using Shaggy Dog or Lead Link or something, then it wouldn't have that great of an impact. It might have a more use with Shaggy Dog where, you know, you've just got a few Dire Wolves and you can get a couple characters -2 strength to bring them from the 4 to the 2, and then he removes them from the challenge and stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of liking that. With Shaggy Dog, that could be really powerful.
Yeah.
All right, so that's another amazing Stark character. They just keep giving us these great, efficient Stark characters, so I guess thank you for that.
Another decent character is Missandei. Her text reads, while no opponent controls a queen character, Missandei cannot be discarded from play. Now, she's 2 cost, 1 strength unique, with a Learn Crest. And the Learn Crest is nice. 1 strength isn't that great, but the best thing about her is she's 2 influence. So, Targ has a very few characters that provide influence for them, and she really comes into a lot of the non-Knights of the Hollow Hill deck and gives you that shot of extra influence you can use for some of those great Targ events. I can definitely see her appearing in a lot of decks.
Yeah, to me, the most obvious, totally broken combo is Long Lances. So you use her as 2 of the 3 to pay for the Long Lances. The Long Lances comes in and stands her. Or, you know, you pay her 2 and then another 1 to bring in a different card with the Long Lances already in play. She stands from the Long Lances. Basically, Long Lances and her means you get 4 influence from her.
Right, or more, because maybe, you know, you use her during your marshalling, and then you play a character, she stands back up. Then you ambush in, you know, a Dragon Thief using her, and then she stands back up, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, like, you basically have 2... You have the Street Waif and her that you can both abuse with the Long Lances. And what that's making me think is, man, do they need to fix the Long Lances.
Yeah, Long Lances are a little overpowered, in my opinion. I'd love to see them on the restricted list or errata to once a round or something.
I think the ideal errata is limited response. I think that fixes them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they're still good, very valuable, but they're not absolutely broken to where they go in every single Targ deck, no matter what.
Yeah. And she also has the ability to take on attachments. And I think that's important because you could put a weapon attachment on her and then use one of the new locations that I love so much to stand her multiple times to use her ability. And in Maester decks, again, you could give her, you know, a dragon trait and use some of the locations in Targ to stand her multiple times to use her influence as well.
My goodness. Those are both fabulous ideas. And the fact that she cannot be discarded is very, very interesting. I'm thinking this might be totally crazy and not tier one. But what if you did put some attachments on her and then you play a Westeros Bleeds deck and you're discarding the board, but she is never going away and she has a bunch of attachments with you know, maybe a rusted sword on her so she gets military claim. I don't know. Any number of things.
Well, I don't think that would be tier one. I agree with you on that. But it's interesting that you talked about Westeros Bleeds, because one card in particular in this set made me, when I looked at it, I said, woo, Westeros Bleeds. And that was actually the new House Baratheon plot. Now, this plot reads, you may play Baratheon characters out of your discard pile during the marshalling phase as if they were in your hand. So this is amazing for a whole bunch of reasons. But the Shaggy player in me said, oh, I could play a Westeros Bleeds Baratheon deck, discard all their characters, play this in the next round, and then play all my characters back out of my discard pile. How cool would that be?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this plot because I feel like with plots like long powers, no sleep. We're getting more and more of these opportunities to recur characters for Baratheon. And if Baratheon is going to be really terrible, it needs something going for it. And for me, recursion is amazing. I mean, if I'm not going to get much control, but you're going to give me a lot of recursion, that's something that excites me very much.
I think this plot comes very close to bringing Baratheon up another level. You know, maybe the Baratheon was at tier 2. I'm thinking it's 1.5 or 1 now. This plot will change the meta for Baratheon.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree. I mean, now Fiery Kiss is just a given. No character is ever dead. That's the thing with Baratheon. I always felt like if they could put enough big boppers on the table and I could just kind of hold them off and hold off their rush, then boom, I Valor and they are all gone. I don't really feel like that's the case anymore because they can play Fiery Kiss one turn, move one to the discard pile, do some other shenanigan, play Long Powers, No Sleep, Melisandre comes back. Then they play Melisandre's Schemes. The other character that had gone into the discard pile, he comes back probably with a dupe. Probably Melisandre gets a dupe. Suddenly they went from a state where all their great characters were dead to they're all viable again. And you're going, wait, I already Valored. How are they back?
Oh, I've seen people playing Maester decks with Melisandre's Scheme and discarding their own deck. So, you know, I'll discard four cards on the top of my own deck. Four cards will go into it the next round or so. You know, they play Melisandre's Scheme, they replay them. The other great thing with that is, you know, there's this discard synergy that's going on with Baratheon. You know, they have, like, Royal Entourage that even if it's in your discard pile and you play that Lord or Lady character, it jumps back in all by itself. It's great. You know, Refugees, if you lost Dominance, you can just play them for nothing now from your discard pile. This is an amazing plot. Like, to me, this was the card of the pack, and it may be the card of the set.
The only problem for me with this plot right now is it's only one every seven plots. So, like, if you build a whole deck around discarding your deck and doing cool stuff, you're only getting that one turn. You better have so many resources that turn that they're coming out of your ears. And if it somehow gets messed up somehow in any way, it's gone, and you built your whole deck around this theme. So I'm just wondering where that line is going to be between doing really cool stuff like you said, like milling your own deck and building everything around that, or just putting in a regular Baratheon deck and saying, all right, my dupes are coming back after a Valor.
I agree with you, actually. I don't think you're going to see a Tier 1 deck that is this plot is its centerpiece. But what I think you're going to see is a lot of decks that, like I said, were 2 or 1.5 with this plot will now be 1 because it will give them that extra redundancy, that extra safety net. You know, I'm not so scared of Targ anymore. You're going to come in, you know, Hatchlings Feast my guys, get them all discarded on your threat turn, and I'm going to play Melisandre's Scheme the next round to get them all back.
And then Targ is going to Valor you, and they all die again. Now what are you going to do?
Yeah, but the Val I'm not so scared of because I got all those beautiful dupes.
Yeah, that's true. You got them all back with the plot.
With their dupes again.
Yep, that's true. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to make for a really interesting deck where, like, it seems like now you get a Seat of Power and you blow it up. Whereas now there's going to be these decks where people have Seats of Power and Narrow Seas sitting there, and you're like, darn it, I know what's happening. He's going to play that plot, and he's just taunting me with all those resources that he's going to use, and you're going to be constantly looking through the discard pile, calculating, okay, he's got 12 resources sitting there, that plot's 4, that's 16, oh my goodness, he can play these 5 characters. It's going to be very interesting.
Look at even some of the more scary things that we've seen. Like, we've already seen Dale, and Dale gets to play, take a card from your discard and bring it back to your hand if it's Baratheon. So that includes stuff like Seats of Power. So if he's in your discard, or if you play him, you could use a Seat of Power, play him, get your Seat of Power back, play that Seat of Power because you haven't played your limited card this round, and just get those resources rolling so easily.
Yeah, he is going to be phenomenal. Him and Melisandre's Scheme together are going to be a really brutal combo, and I'm actually rooting for Baratheon. I wonder if our listeners out there say, oh, he talks so much smack about Baratheon, he must hate that deck. No, I love Baratheon. I've tried to make him hundreds of times. I just get so frustrated that they have no control, And I think this is a way that might be able to work around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this is a great pack for Baratheon. I'm hoping that we'll see a few more cards for them. We know that Dale's coming, but I hope to see a few more cards for them. Other than that, in this series, bring them up to the T1 level.
And Dark Nash, I don't know if you noticed, we got a decent river plot. Oh my goodness. It's a 5-3-1, 5 gold. There aren't that many 5 gold plots. Whenever a new 5 gold plot comes out, my eyes light up for a second like it's Christmas morning. 5 gold? Ooh, does it do something? I'm guessing it does nothing. So this one says, river, when revealed, each opponent must discard one power from a card he or she controls, if able. Then, if your revealed plot card, trigger the when revealed effect on the top river plot card in your pile, in your used pile. So basically, it's a river plot, so you're going to get to trigger another one, and you get to remove a power from a card.
Yeah.
Who cares about that? What you're basically getting is a 5 gold plot that you get to throw into your river cycle, which is pretty interesting. It could be a 7 gold plot. It could be a 5 card plot with a reveal. You could do quite a bit of stuff with it.
Until I see a river plot that says something like, when revealed, raise the claim on your revealed plot by one, I won't get super excited about the river plots. Or something that has a huge effect. Because right now, I always feel like the river plots just aren't as good as the city plots.
Yeah, they're not. What excites me is that it gets us closer. Every time I see a new city, a new river plot that's not awful, I think, hey, great. We're that much closer to a new viable plot deck.
See, I loved your choice of wording because that was exactly what I thought. Hey, it's not awful. I didn't think, hey, it's good. And until I get river plots that say, hey, this is good, I'm not going to play them. I mean, I tried them. I really did. I went to Gen Con with a deck that ran a bunch of river plots. But they're just not that great.
Yeah, unlike you, I'm smarter than that. And I did not go to Gen Con with a river plot deck. And I haven't tried them that carefully. But I do appreciate that you have tried them and can tell me that they do and that they are indeed terrible.
Well, I mean, the deck was good, right, Tiny?
I might have lost to it, but I believe I made the top 16 and you went home crying.
Yeah, there was some tears that day, but I feel okay as long as I beat you.
Fair enough. You were my only loss until the top 16, which I will not go into again. Okay, so we actually skipped my favorite card in the pack. When I saw this card, I thought, wow, this card is a meta shifter big time. And that's Victarion Greyjoy.
While Victarion Greyjoy is attacking, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by one if you control more participating characters with naval enhancements than the defending opponent. Now, this card is interesting because it's a little bit different than all the other naval cards that we've seen to date. All the other ones say if you have participating naval attackers, which means you had to attack normally and jump them into the battle. Victorian here just says as long as you have them in the battle, which means I could have a fleet that has a naval enhancement on a power icon, and it also has a military icon, and it attacks with Victorian Greyjoy, then that will count towards my number of naval enhancements in the battle to get that extra claim.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I look at him and I think Stark Murder is what he is, only with saves? Like, can I really play a Stark Murder deck with saves? That seems totally broken.
We got Warcrest. We have fantastic art. Probably the best art in the pack, in my opinion. And an awesome character. I really like him. I think he's the best Victorian Greyjoy by far so far. I really like him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking at least early in the cycle, he's an auto-include. Because early in the cycle, there just aren't that many naval guys. I mean, there's probably tons of decks, like, say, Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill. I don't think mine's going to have any naval icons in it. My Martell deck, it's not going to have any naval icons in it. So early in this cycle, he is going to be really, really game-breaking, I think, just as even a one-off in a regular Greyjoy deck. Say a Greyjoy winner deck, you've got the Marauders, now you have him. Maybe you play the new army, and instead of the Maester plot to go get Wendemir, you play the army plot, you play Die by the Swords, you play Price of Wars. Wow, you have a whole different looking deck. And in this meta, where there's a billion locations out there, being able to play three newly made lords and, say, two Price of Wars to take out two locations each time, that is a lot of location control.
Yeah, I really, really like the way Greyjoy is moving, because really they were, in the books, in my opinion, the people with the most superior navy, and that was their huge strength, right? So to see it reflected in this section so far is great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about him, so much so that I immediately took a Greyjoy deck. I went no agenda, just to screw over the other people who are excited about the new army. Put him in, put three copies of the new army in there, put in Balin's Host, put in two copies of the Reavers, put in the army plot, and got owned by a Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck.
Yeah, I think this early, it's pretty tough to rely on these big beefy characters that can easily be knelt or have their icons stripped or stuff like that. You need those, naval chuds that hopefully will be coming to fill out the deck.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like you could dial it back and just go regular Greyjoy deck, slot him in, boom. You're getting more kill. Flame. You're not going to want to run Die by the Swords doing that, but just having that claim boosted every now and then seems to me to be pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I think he's just worth it the way he is. Absolutely.
So I'm going to call him my favorite card in the pack. Who's your favorite card?
It's the Baratheon Plot Melisandre Scheme.
All right. Well, there we go. So it's time for our favorite segment, Ask Bruno. And John, I don't know if you noticed, but a new pack miraculously dropped like mana from the sky. Have you gotten yours yet?
I did. I was very happy to see a new product from FFG for Thrones.
Yes, I think we all were. So after thumbing through the pack, what's your favorite card in the pack so far?
I think this is a great pack. I really like a lot of the cards in it. I know you got the standard, one of every house, the big army now that we have. So that's 6 of the 20 cards. But so out of those big armies, I probably like the Lannister one the best. I think they need to have plus the ability to be able to like stand somebody afterwards is pretty cool, because you do need to have two characters involved in a challenge to be able to make it a naval challenge. So I probably like the Lannister one the most. But in terms of the other cards, my favorite card probably is Melisandre Scheme. I love the ability of recursion, of course, of being able to do recursion and be able to get dupes will be pretty fun. I mean, if you had a character that was dead, if I have Robert Baratheon and I saved him and I had to discard my dupe, I can always play it for free during, my marshaling phase. So that's a nice way to get some dupes back. And also just being able to have characters in a discard. You can play a march to the wall one turn, and then next turn get your Melisandre Scheme, and you can get that guy back in play. But and the stats, 4 gold is pretty good on it too. So that's probably my favorite card. Although in terms of my favorite character in there, I probably like Wyman Manderly. He's my favorite character in the pack. Masandi's a pretty close second. So those are my favorite cards in the pack. There's a bunch of great cards in the pack. Victorian's awesome too. So there's a lot of good cards in the pack.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really, really happy with the pack. I mean, if they're going to make you wait as long as they made us wait, this is the perfect pack to drop.
Sure.
But my question for you is, do you think Melisandre's Scheme will actually raise Baratheon up to a fairly competitive tournament-level deck?
A single plot's not going to. They need a lot more than that. But I think Baratheon is still lacking, but this is a good card for them. If it was from the dead pile, like the old card that we had called the Red God's Blessing, you were able to take and play your Baratheon character from your dead pile. Now, that would be a little bit more amazing. But from your discard pile, it's still pretty good. I think, it's a good card, but not enough to bring Baratheon up from, I think they're in seventh place. Aren't they below neutral, I think, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not sure I would make that claim, but I would certainly put him in sixth. Do you see a recursion deck on having an upswing with something like Fiery Kiss to put your guys back in the discard pile and then playing Melisandre's Scheme? Or are you thinking that you wouldn't have quite enough resources to be able to play a bunch of guys out of your discard pile anyway, so that level of recursion isn't going to work that well?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think... I don't think that it's really that... I don't see it being that strong yet. I mean, you still need more. Targ, I still think, has the best recursion, you know, with the Street Waves, but you throw the Street Waves in another house deck, I mean, they're really not that expensive to play, you know. I mean, for a one strength character, an entry icon, but getting a recursion card is pretty awesome, so, yeah, I don't know yet. I mean, I don't know if there's really, really strong recursion build out there yet, but there's definitely some mini machines out there.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if this is also some sort of precursor to what's going to come in the later packs in the cycle. So, for instance, if there's three other good Vera recursion cards and you have this plot, suddenly I think we have a pretty decent shot at a Vera recursion theme. If this is just a one-off and there's no others, then it's probably not going to be that strong.
I agree.
So I guess we will have to wait and see.
Yep.
So I have a question for you. When you saw the Lannister Navy guy, the fleet from the Arbor, and
yep,
you saw he had a war crest, mm-hmm, were you excited, or did you just think, why the heck does this guy have a war crest?
No, I think it's great that it's got a war crest. I mean, they all got war crests, right? So, I mean, they are battling on the sea. So, I mean, it's good because, you know, just to have any kind. Lannister has a pretty solid Warcrest build, so it fits them pretty nicely. I mean, their Stark obviously does too. You can make a claim for Greyjoy having one too, so it's nice that they all have it.
I guess my question is, can you think of some good usages for having the Warcrest and no military icon? I know for me, it's Price of War and Die by the Sword that spring to mind, and so I'm thinking...
For me, it's Distinct Mastery.
Ah, okay.
So you want to be able to jump him into the challenge, you know? So, I mean, you could have him initiate a challenge, stand him back up, you know, and then have him again to use on the other crest or in defense or... So, I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying about him not having a military icon into the war crest, but still being able to have... You get the bonuses from the strength of the plots too, if you wanted to play the Power of Arms. So you get that extra strength in there. And you also get, like I said, the Distinct Mastery is probably the number one card I actually thought of first.
And I think that works well with Cersei as well. So you could have a lot of your cards would work really well in that Lannister mirror matchup. That's usually an absolute death matchup. They kneel all your guys. You can Distinct Mastery them all up. I think that's kind of an interesting idea.
I agree.
John, I might even say you sound like you're good at this game.
I played it a couple times. I'm just still learning it.
What do you think about Little Bird? I know when I saw Little Bird, I got really excited. And it seems like most people aren't that excited about Little Bird.
I think Little Bird is good. There are quite a few cool tricks that you can do with it. I think people discover them as you go along. One trick that I have seen actually recently, which is actually really kind of fun, was I was playing my opponent, and I attacked with an intrigue character. They had no intrigue character standing, so I did an intrigue challenge, and my opponent did have one card in shadows. The card in shadows happened to be Sir Mandon Moore. So he brought Sir Mandon Moore out of the shadows, gave him the intrigue icon on Little Bird, and then defended and killed my character. I thought that was pretty cool. There's definitely going to be other neat things you can do with it. I mean, obviously, the intrigue icon is huge. Martell intrigue icon removal, you can give that intrigue icon back. You know, giving a character stealth is going to be great. I mean, the infamy in a Lannister deck is pretty good, too. But I think that there's definitely a lot of stuff that you're going to be able to do with this. So I think it's worth the one cost, just like Penny is. I mean, you don't have too many one cost allies, but still, I'd rather have a unique one versus a non-unique one. Another cool thing is, you know, just like with Penny, you can use that, her ability or a little bird before first snow triggers, so then you can bounce them back to your hand. So that's kind of cool too. So I think it's a pretty good card.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard people say something like, Lannister doesn't need more intrigue icons, and I think you said it exactly how I'm thinking, that it's a great way to stop Martell from stripping Cersei or stripping other icons. You can just give them back.
Sure. The way you need to think about some of these characters, not just like Little Bird, but lots of other characters. Like I'll give you the best example. The best example I can think of right now is Arya Stark from House of Dreams. From that whole starting of House of Dreams, the whole cycle, but the House of Black and White, I think, was the pact that hers was in. And hers is, if a unique star character dies, you can discard her to kill another character of 3 strength or less. If you think of it as a character, say, hey, that one's not as good as the Shadows one, I mean, that's probably true. But if you think of it as a utility card, just like it would use, like, you know, No Quarter or Die by the Sword, then it's a pretty good card. So you can't think of it as, if I put a Little Bird in my deck, I don't think of it as a character. I think of it more as a utility card, like an extra event or something.
Yeah, that sounds good. Have you got a chance to play with many of the cards yet?
I haven't played with any of these cards yet, no.
Okay. So I'm starting to think that my favorite card in the set might be the Black Sails Agenda. What do you think about that so far?
I am really looking forward to making a good Black Sails deck. I don't know if we need more cards still to come out, which obviously we do. I mean, just like with the Maester Cycle, once you had all six packs, the Maester Cycle was pretty phenomenal. But we didn't even have all six packs, and it still kicked Gen Con 2 years ago when Zyler played it and won the championship. So it's going to be better as you go along. I'm actually toying with making a neutral house deck with all six houses in there, just to try it now.
You mean all the Navy armies?
Anything that's got the naval crest, yeah. The naval enhancement.
Wow, that's going to be a lot of naval stuff. I think sure. You're going to be triggering the Black Sails Agenda.
I hope so.
Yeah, I've been playing it quite a bit. I've been playing it with Victarion, and I've been playing the Black Sails part as almost that toolbox that has everything. So I put crazy stuff in there like Bastard and any card I need. So like, for instance, there's a guy in our meta who will play the Red Viper and put 20 attachments on him. All I have to do is go get Bastard and blink, they're all gone. Okay.
Or you have a Lannister, you have the brothel, you got Volantis in, you got... Well, not if he's got attachments on him, right? But yeah, definitely the brothel, though, if you can get him knelt.
Yep, definitely. But so I'm thinking Black Sails is looking really strong. When I first saw it, I thought, this is really strong. And then I thought it more about it more and thought, well, I don't know. But the more I play it, the more I like it. Do you have any thoughts on what you think an appropriate deck size is for it yet?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm still going to probably try a 60 card deck and see how that goes, but maybe 70. So you have a 35 card deck. I mean, you got to figure in a regular game. I mean, you're getting your initial 7. Then from there, you see, you know, how many cards you have left. If you have a draw deck, you might want to put a few more cards in. If you think you're going to be triggering the Black Sails a lot, you know, I think that would be pretty good. The best comparison I can make to it is, again, back in the CCG days, we had a Baratheon agenda called Brothers at War. And Brothers at War, you built 2 30-card decks. And neither deck could have a duplicate card in it. So no, out of those 30 cards, there ought to be 30 different cards. Now, you could have those exact same 30 cards in the other deck, too, if you wanted. But you had 2 30-card decks. And what you did was you used one. When it was time for the draw, you drew from either one. So we would, you know, I can compare it to that in terms of, did I have enough cards in one or the other? And, cause if one card got one deck got decked, would I have the other one? Stuff like that. So that's about the best comparison I make to it, but I might try 35 in each deck and see how it goes.
Yeah, I tried 60 first, just because it seems like the obvious place to start.
Sure.
And I actually got decked twice on turn 5.
Nice.
But that also was factored in my cutting. Your cutting has to be perfect, because if you cut the hold even slightly bigger, they give it to you, and you have even less cards in your draw deck.
Yeah, and I was wondering about this, too. I mean, I wonder if, like, when you present your deck, can you actually count your cards? Can you say, okay, 1, 2, 3, and put 30 over here and 30 over there and let it go? I mean, or do you have to just put it down and kind of estimate? So I don't know what the rule is on that, or there will be a ruling on it. But, I mean, if my opponent was using the black sails and they counted 30 and 30, I would not have a problem with it.
Interesting, because the only wording we get is cut the deck. It doesn't count the deck. It just says cut it.
Sure. But, you know, you can, you know, interpret cutting in the tournament rules and see if that would apply.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see how that's ruled. I hope it is ruled that you can count it out, because then if you can't, I see myself spending a couple hours practicing cutting, which frankly seems like a waste of time.
Right.
So I've moved my deck up to 68, and I'm pretty happy with it at 68. I haven't gotten decked yet, and I haven't felt like it's too diluted.
Right.
And the card that I've liked the most so far in those decks are the fleets. So I'm playing a Greyjoy version, and I realized that since you have to attack with two, the fleet is amazing, because like you said, you put him in, and then you get to stand the other character, so you're not wasting two guys, because when you're attacking with a giant character, you don't want to attack with two. You're going to win with just the one.
True, I agree with that.
Yeah, because I was playing with Victarion, and I was mostly just using him, and I was realizing, oh my goodness, it takes all my resources to get Victarion out, and so I have to attack with Victarion and the one guy I flopped, and now I only get one challenge every time. It was very frustrating.
Right.
All right, well, we have another question from one of our listeners, and he's wondering, do you think there is a top-tier Lannister build? I know we saw Atkinson do really well with one at Worlds, but he's Greg Atkinson. I feel like you could do really well at Worlds with a not-top-tier one deck. So do you think there is a top-tier Lannister build right now?
Well, Matt Lay also plays pretty highly with the Lannister deck, too. I mean, Greg beat Matt in the top 8, you know, to make it to Final Four. So either one of them would have represented the Final Four with the Lannister deck. Do I think there's a top-tier Lannister deck out there? Yeah, I do. And, again, it has to do a lot with their kneeling because, I mean, obviously that's their big mechanic. But just being able to kneel that character at the right time can just get you through and winning challenges and win games. And seriously, she can rack up a lot of power very quickly. So, I mean, I have actually won games with the Lannister deck on the first and second turn. One turn I had 13 power and finished it off on the second turn by revealing the plot, you know, the Red Wedding. So, and I won games on the second turn with that. So are there top tier decks for that house? For sure. Do they all involve Cersei? I don't think they have to, because there's all, you know, you can win games that I even never have to draw her too. I think right now that Lannister and Baratheon probably need the most help. So that's what I want to really try to build right now. I mean, I think right now Targaryen is still on the top with Martell and Stark pretty close. I like to try to build the Lannister build or the Baratheon build now and see what I can do with that and try those out for a little bit, maybe through some regionals. I think that, you know, the Targ deck is, and I mean, I know I played this at Worlds, but too easy. You know, a lot of people are taking versions of the deck I played and trying it out, and there's lots of great stuff in there. So, you know, who knows what will change when the fact comes out, but it's a pretty solid deck, and, you know, even Zyler couldn't mess it up, and he won Moon Boy.
I must admit, I am really, really hoping that you play Baratheon throughout the regional season, and that Baratheon gets no more cards to help it.
Well, I have to give you some kind of advantage.
Exactly.
It's my handicap.
A handicap.
Yeah, it's a handicap, yeah. I offered to play with one hand down behind my back, but, you know.
That doesn't actually help. If you would play with, like, an eye patch and something jammed into part of your brain, then maybe we could be somewhere.
Right.
All right, John. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week, and I look forward to talking to you next time.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us for another edition of Summer is Coming. Remember, you can email the show at summeriscomingpodcast@gmail.com. We're always happy to receive feedback and answer your questions on the air. So until next time, stay classy, Westeros.